All right, guys, you are locked on Falcons. I am your host, Aaron Freeman, and today we are doing the year-end review of the Falcons offensive line in 2018.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily Atlanta Falcons podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
All right, guys, you know me, I'm Aaron Freeman, been covering the Falcons for many years at FalcFans.com, on Twitter at FalcFans. And the host of this illustrious Locked On Falcons podcast. I may be a little bit loopy today because I'm coming down with a cold, but I will power through it so that we can at least get the offense down and done with this year-end roster review. I've broken down the quarterbacks, the running backs, the fullbacks, the tight ends, the wide receiver. We're now getting to the offensive line so that next week we can start the defense. And got a lot to talk about today, and because I do, I'm not going to spend as much time as I have on some of these previous episodes looking ahead to 2019. We will definitely touch upon some 2019 issues when we get to some of these individual Falcons offensive linemen, particularly those guys that are sort of on the roster bubble or free agents this upcoming year. But in part, I'm going to sort of, in terms of looking ahead at some of the holes and the ways that the Falcons can fill it, I'm not going to do as much of that today, simply because I do want to watch a little bit more of this free agent crop, this draft crop among offensive linemen, and maybe in late February, early March, really do a deep dive on sort of how the Falcons can address their offensive line issues. So that's what I want to say at the top. And before we get into it, and I'm only just going to prolong this episode even further, but I do want to talk some big picture stuff with the Falcons offensive line, because I think in a lot of ways, the Falcons 2018 O-line has sort of gotten more flack than it deserves. I think in part is because I believe in two things when it comes to offensive line play. The first thing I believe is that, you know, stability on your offensive line equals stability for your offense. And I think that's why there's a significant correlation between teams that are basically able to have continuity up front with their offensive line starting lineups and team success. You see that with the Falcons' history. You know, the Falcons had six different starting lineups as far as the five offensive linemen are concerned this past season. And I've been tracking this going back to 1996. And the six different starting fives that the Falcons had this year is tied for the most that the team has had going back the last 23 seasons. And if you look at the six seasons where the Falcons did have six different starting offensive lines, they averaged only 5.3 wins in those seasons and never made the playoffs. And I know a couple of you stat nerds out there are interested in this, but there's been one season where the Falcons had five different starting offensive lines. They won seven games that year, did not make the playoffs. There have been five seasons where the Falcons had four different starting offensive lines going back to 96. They averaged 7.2 wins in those seasons and made the playoffs one time or 20% of the time. There have been six seasons of three offensive line starting lineups. They averaged 8.3 wins and made the playoffs three times or 50% of the time. There have been two seasons of two starting lineups, average of 12 wins, made the playoffs 100% of the time. Three seasons of one starting lineup, average of 12.7 wins, and made the playoffs 100% of the time. So there's clearly like a linear curve when you look at sort of continuity on the offensive line, at least in the number of different starting lineups that a team features. So that's one thing I definitely believe in. But the second thing I also believe in is that good play calling, aka explosive and aggressive play calling, can somewhat overcome subpar offensive line play. Now, there is a certain level of terrible offensive line play that can't be overcome. All you got to do is look at the 2018 Arizona Cardinals, but you can look at a team like Houston this past season and see that because you need to have pieces on your quarterback like the Falcons do and like the Texans do, and you need to have weapons at wide receiver, et cetera. But like, it is possible to have bad offensive lines and still have a good offense despite that initial point I was making with the continuity and stability. So I think when you believe in those two things, as I do, you know, it's not a sort of as black or white perspective that I think a lot of people tend to have with offensive line play, where, oh, the offense is bad, it must be the offensive line is good or bad. Or if the offense is good, the offensive line must be good or whatnot. And I think a lot of it stems from my also belief that Sark just wasn't a good enough play caller to overcome subpar offensive line play. and definitely was the type of play caller that really did need stability up front. And I know it seems like every other episode I come on here, and sometimes I'm defending Sarkin or making excuses for him, and other times I'm being hypercritical of him. And I think a lot of that is due to the fact that, it's not a sort of black and white in regard to Steve Sarkisian and his tenure in Atlanta, as some people like to portray it, where it's either he was this martyred victim that, you know, got this super raw deal and got railroaded by the Falcons, versus, you know, how other people might portray it, where he was this incompetent villain that had no business being hired in the first place. And so I think those are lazy narratives when it comes to Steve Sarkisian, and I think there's often lazy narratives when it comes to offensive line play, and particularly this 2018 Falcons offensive line. I think there's clear evidence, despite the popular perception, that the Falcons offensive line got better in the second half of 2018. I've already sort of mentioned in my running back review how the run efficiency metrics show that the second half of the season was a significant improvement for the Falcons offensive line, and they already got good run blocking from up front in the second half of the season. And I think there's clear evidence to say that the collective pass protection was better in the second half of the season, or at least just as capable. There was no significant drop off in the second half of the season. The reason why I make that point is because I think you often hear one particular lazy narrative that I've heard, particularly in reference to defending Sark, is that, you know, he was limited and held back by the fact that he had to deal with backup offensive linemen. And I think if you're paying attention, and the Pro Football Focus grades back this up, and pretty much any other statistical metric that you could look up if you were so inclined to do so, also support this, that the Falcons backup guards actually outplayed their starters this year. What Schweitzer was better than Levitre, albeit Levitre had a limited sample size. And the combination of Ben Garland and Zane Beatles was better than Brandon Fusco. But, you know, all that being said, I still think, you know, I obviously have been an advocate of the team upgrading their offensive line, because for obvious reasons, if you get better offensive line, you get a more stable offensive line, which means a more stable offense, which means obviously a better offense. And I think, you know, a lot of that stems from back during a time during the season where I thought Sark was going to retain his job. And so I thought it was a priority to get better offensive line because of his less than inspiring at times play calling. But now that Sark is gone, I still sort of believe that, because at least history suggests that, you know, considering what Dirk Cutter has been in previous stints, is that he too is an offensive play caller that, you know, has a tendency to struggle to overcome subpar offensive line play, at least looking at his Tampa Bay teams from afar, and I'm obviously looking at some of his Falcon teams as well. So, you know, I'll get into the individual breakdowns in just a bit, but I do want to say, yes, I do believe that the Falcons need to upgrade their offensive line, and that's a priority this offseason. It's an aging unit. They've made decisions over the past 4 years to not invest significant draft capital into that group. And I think they're sort of now at a point where they're kind of reaping what they're sowing. And to continue the metaphor, the harvest is not going to get the team through the metaphorical winter. And I think when you also couple that with the fact that when you look at the rest of the offensive roster talent at quarterback, running back, and the other skill positions, it's very clear that there are some more glaring holes on this offensive line in comparison to those other spots where you have obvious Pro Bowl caliber players. But I also think that doesn't necessarily automatically mean that the offensive line is terrible, as some people would like to portray it. It's just, you know, they just need to get better there. And, you know, it seems like to me there's this one narrative where people seem to be acting like this 2018 Falcons offensive line is like one of the worst that the team has ever had. And I just don't think that's true. I think that's an exaggeration. And I think, you know, in some ways the gap between, say, the 2018 Falcons offensive line, and it was a hot take, but the gap between the 2018 Falcons offensive line and the 2016 one is probably not as big as you probably perceive it to be. But I think in large part due to, you know, continuity and or better play calling, that a lot of the issues that the 2016 offensive line had were unnoticed, while in part due to team success or lack of team success and other issues that the Falcons had in 2018, all of their 2018 offensive line issues sort of were pushed to the forefront. So that all being said, we'll get into breaking down the Falcons' individual players up front, starting with the two most stable guys on the offensive line in Jake Matthews and Alex Mack in just a bit. But I do want to let you guys know that Brad Motter of Locked On Rams and Mark Schofield of Locked On Patriots are getting you guys geared up for Super Bowl 53. Check those podcasts out wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, your team every day. So let's start off by talking about Jake Matthews. He had his best season to date, coming off of the heels of a massive contract extension that I think makes him now like the third highest paid offensive tackle last I checked. And it was nice to sort of see Jake really play at a high level and look like the player that many years ago I sort of compared him to, which was Jake Long, you know, back in the Jake Long when he was a Pro Bowl guy prior to sort of injuries sapping his career. And like, that's who Jake often reminds me of. And I think this was the first year where that comparison doesn't seem as much like a stretch as it may have seemed in previous years. The one issue I always sort of had with Jake Matthews was that you'd always get like 10 to 12 really steady, good, solid performances from him a year, but there will always be a handful of games where he would really struggle because certain pass rushers, particularly those guys that have speed but can also convert speed to power, and we saw this last season in 2017 with guys like Jerry Hughes and Mario Addison and Everson Griffin, would always give him a lot of trouble and he would struggle in those games. And so when he got paid this summer and sort of looking ahead to the season and seeing guys like Derek Barnett and T. Sizzle and Miles Garrett and Addison and Carl Lawson on the schedule, I was like, oh man, you know, Jake's going to be solid again, but you know, in some of those games, against some of those matchups, he's going to struggle and people are going to be like, oh no, Jake's overpaid and all that sort of thing that you sort of get the hair pulling and the exaggeration from certain elements, vocal elements of the fan base when Jake struggles. But that didn't really happen this year. You know, he had a couple of issues against Lawson, one notable sack that he gave up late in that game that sort of killed the Falcons' momentum. But other than that one play, he was pretty, certainly much better than I expected him to be against Lawson, and much better against some of those other guys that I mentioned than I expected him to be. And so my hope is, you know, Jake at his age can probably play another 5+ years in Atlanta, injuries withstanding. And my hope is that the majority of those years will be very similar, if not better, than how he played in 2018. So the sky, I won't say the sky is the limit, but things are looking up for Jake Matthews. And hopefully this is the beginning of sort of the second phase of his career where he's widely considered to be one of the most consistent and reliable left tackles in the league moving forward. Let's talk about Alex Mack, the Falcons starting center, who did make the Pro Bowl. Got off to a little bit of a slow start during the first month of the season. Had a lot more breakdowns in pass protection than we've grown accustomed to. Figured things out after that point and went back to sort of being really pretty reliable Alex Mack. To me, the issue with Alex Mack right now for me is, the main issue is, how much longer is he going to play? Because we saw that at least through parts of this season that there were at least some cracks to it. And so I don't know if we can take Alex Mack for granted to the degree that we have probably over the last couple of years. And so, you know, given that he's going to be 34 by the end of 2019, obviously I think it's behooves the Falcons to have sort of a long-term plan at that center position for 2020 and beyond. The other issue I have with Alex Mack isn't necessarily an Alex Mack issue, but, you know, a lot of the breakdowns in the second half of the season, for me at least, looking at the offensive line, I think had less to do with, like, individual players just being terrible, although there were certainly some highlight reel moments that you can find those instances. But I think a lot of it, particularly when it comes to pass protection, where the Falcons had too many breakdowns and protections, where it just seemed like whether teams were bringing pressure up through the A-gap or bringing a slot corner off the edge or something, there was a lot of too many free rushers that were able to get at Matt Ryan and affect the quarterback. And like that became an issue to me because in 2016, I thought that was an issue where pretty much any time a team blitzed in 2016, they were able to get at home to the quarterback. And that wasn't as much an issue last season in 2017, but I think it sort of reared its ugly head again in 2018. And again, I don't think that's blamed on Alex Mack, but because he's, you know, the guy calling the protections at the line and primarily responsible for that, he is sort of somewhat responsible for that. So it's not to blame him, but he is responsible for that. So I think some of that you can obviously blame on the lack of cohesion and continuity. But as I said, given that the Falcons also had the same issue in 2016 and they had the same starting five, it does make me less inclined to just simply say, oh, it's because they had, you know, they kept rotating all these new guys in and that's why there were so many breakdowns. But I'm certain that the lack of cohesion and continuity was a significant contributor to that issue. So hopefully if the Falcons can get that continuity back in 2019, it will become less of an issue moving forward. Let's talk about Andy Levitre as we move into the rest of the interior offensive line. I don't expect Andy Levitre to come back. I think the Falcons aren't going to bring back a soon-to-be 33-year-old to start week one, when by the time we get to week one of 2019, it will have been 21 months since we had seen Andy Levitre start and finish consecutive games for this Falcon team. So I am definitely saddened for Andy Levitre, because a player that has been as durable as he has been throughout his career, to have his potentially NFL career, but certainly his career in Atlanta, end the way that it has with two sort of season-ending injuries in back-to-back years. But I think the idea that he's sort of an option for the Falcons at left guard makes no sense. And so I think his injury basically gives the team an easy excuse to start over with someone new. Whether they decide to do that remains to be seen, because one option they have at their disposal is potentially Wes Schweitzer. I think Wes Schweitzer had his moments, and one of the reasons why the offensive line play got better in the second half of the season was simply due to the fact that Wes Schweitzer played better in the second half of the season than he did in the early going. And it seemed like it took him a couple of games to sort of readjust to playing on the left side, again, which was the side of the offensive line that he played throughout his college career. And so I think it does make some sense for the Falcons to want to keep him on the left side, because that's where he spent the bulk of his time playing, both at San Jose State and certainly when compared to how he played in 2017, his play on the left side was better in 2018. If you just look at the games after the Falcons bye week, starting in week 9, Wes Schweitzer actually earned the 12th highest grade among offensive guards, according to Pro Football Focus. So he was on par with, you know, his grade was on par with guys like Marshall Yanda and Gabe Jackson, David DeCastro, and Ali Marpet, many of whom are considered to be among the premier guards in the league. So I think the Falcons thus could make a case for Schweitzer sort of being the incumbent at left guard. But I think, would I be sitting here confident that, you know, the guy that showed up for the last 8 games of the season would be the same guy that would show up starting 2019 and be consistently that same guy? No, not. I'm not confident at all. I think the knock, even on Schweitzer, even given how well he played collectively over the final 8 games of the season, is that he's still had his fair share of ups and downs during that time. So I think, for me at least, I don't really have a problem with Schweitzer being in the midst of a competition next summer for either one of the guard spots. I think, you know, you could be in a situation like where him and Fusco are sort of competing for a job at that right guard spot. And considering that Fusco is coming off an injury and might wind up missing most of OTAs in the offseason and whatnot, that you could see a situation where Schweitzer's getting the majority of starting reps, you know, from April through June. But I think in terms of sort of like handing him the reins to a spot and being like, it's his job to lose, or it's his job all to get outright, I don't necessarily know if I'm that's too kosher with me. But I think I'll be curious to sort of see what Schweitzer does in 2019, because 2019 is the final year of his rookie contract. I think he's also an option, given sort of that we kicked the tires a little bit with him at center last year, that he is at least an option for the Falcons to be the long-term replacement for Alex Mack. I don't know if that's a good option quite yet, but again, a lot of that depends on what happens in 2019. So this upcoming season is a make-break year for him. I'll be curious to sort of see if the Falcons sort of look at him as sort of good depth and sort of got the inside track to potentially replace Ben Garland as the team's utility guy because of his potential to be able to play all three interior spots, or do they sort of see him as a quality backup guard, or do they legitimately see him as a capable long-term asset as a starter? Right now, I don't necessarily see the latter thing quite yet, but he could certainly prove it to me. I think he's definitely a quality backup guard. The other things to me are question marks at this point. So there's more offensive linemen that we do need to talk about on today's episode, but I do want to let you guys know that there are two Locked On podcasts devoted to the draft. Locked On NFL Draft Podcast with hosts John Ledger and Trevor Sikkema. The Draft Dudes Podcast with hosts Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs. Find them both wherever you get your Locked On podcasts, including you can find it at the Draft Network, and where you can get those guys' written content as well as several others. Again, that's thedraftnetwork.com, your team every day. So let's talk about Ben Garland. And he is a free agent this year. I think I like Garland. I think, you know, part of the reason why I think he was an upgrade over Fusco, and I mentioned this during the season, particularly when it comes to run blocking, was that Garland is much more capable of hitting those second level blocks that sort of spring running backs on the second level. And I don't think it's a coincidence that the Falcons yards per carry and their number of explosive runs went up in the second half of the season with Fusco out of the lineup, because I think those second level blocking is Fusco's greatest weakness. I think Garland is still a valuable depth piece, largely due to the fact that he has extensive experience playing center. And for that reason, I expect him to be brought back, but I don't think it's guaranteed, because again, he's another guy that's on the wrong side of 30. But I think unless the Falcons are convinced Wes Schweitzer can handle those duties, or are absolutely convinced that they're going to draft a center to be sort of the heir apparent to Alex Mack at some point in the, say, mid rounds of this upcoming draft, you know, I think it makes a lot of sense to bring Garland back. So especially if you can get him for like a cheap deal that's close to veteran minimum. Let's talk about Brandon Fusco. And I think he did not play well in his debut season in Atlanta. I would probably grade him as like a C-. I think, as I mentioned, his struggles to block on the move sort of limited his effectiveness as a run blocker, and his pass protection wasn't great. He wasn't terrible. He was hot and cold. He was up and down. I think he struggled against quality competition, in particular when in pass protection at times during the early part of the season, which was a legitimate and similar criticism that I and others leveled against Chris Chester, formerly their starting right guard in 2015 and 2016. But I think the key difference for me in that regard is that I could, at least, not everybody else, but I could certainly overlook some of Chester's transgressions in pass protection, largely due to how good and effective he was as a run blocker, particularly when it came to nailing those second level blocks. And, you know, I think a lot of people were sort of questioning and asking me, and I've answered this on a number of recent Q&A episodes, whether Brandon Fusco is going to be brought back. I do think he will be back, but it's certainly not guaranteed. We'll have to sort of see how much his injury affects that. If it keeps him out through April, does it keep him out through July? Whatever the case may be, but I do expect him to be back healthy for camp, because that's basically what Dan Quinn said. But then again, you could take everything Dan Quinn says as far as injuries go with a grain of salt. So we'll have to see how that goes. But he's certainly a guy that at this point in time is somewhat on the bubble headed into 2019. You know, I think the saving grace for Fusco is that if you do get rid of him, you're potentially opening up a third hole on your offensive line, because if you consider him as a potential bounce back candidate as that right guard spot, you know, I think you're sitting there thinking we're in a better position as a Falcons organization trying to fill only two holes on the offensive line as opposed to three. And if you cut Fusco, clearly you're opening up a third hole. You could certainly debate whether or not Fusco coming back is going to, you know, fill that hole, but at least, you know, he's an option there. So, you know, we'll see if Fusco has a bounce back season in 2019. You know, I'm not going to expect him. If I gave him a C minus in 2018, I'm not really expecting more than C plus level play in 2019, which in my eyes is just basically stopgap level. But, you know, at this point, the Falcons are beggars and can't necessarily be choosers. But I do firmly expect that even if Fusco does return this year, that the Falcons are going to try to bring in some young, talented guard at the very least that they can sort of pencil in as their replacement for him in 2020. So we'll sort of see how that goes. The last guard I want to talk about is Zane Beatles. Don't have a lot to say about him. He came in. He was very serviceable down the stretch. He was better than Garland in pass protection, struggled as a run blocker. You know, the Arizona game was a game that really stood out to me in particular where he really did struggle, but there was a couple of others. Similar to LaVitri, I don't really entertain the possibility of him being re-signed by the Falcons. I think he's the type of guy that in, let's say, October, when you have an emergency on your offensive line, you can call him up and be like, hey, Zane, you ready to play? Dust off the cleats and let's go. But at no point should he be part of your offseason vision. He's a 32-year-old backup. Certainly has versatility to play multiple spots, four, if not five, offensive line spots. But, like, you know, he's 32 years old with no upside. If he doesn't retire this offseason, he's going to retire very, very soon. So no long-term value. You might as well give that roster spot to some 22, 23, or 24-year-old guy that at least has a semblance of, you know, a pinch of a chance of being a long-term asset for you. Like a guy like a Sean Harlow or something like that makes a lot more sense for that roster spot than Zane Beatles, even if you think Zane Beatles is better than Sean Harlow, which you could make a case based off of what we've seen so far is true. But, you know, at least there's at least a 4% chance that Sean Harlow turns into something decent down the road is 4% higher than what Zane Beatles is going to bring for you. So that's how I sort of see it. So to Zane Beatles, I say thank you for your service, but you're no longer needed. Let's talk tackles. And let's start, obviously, with the big guy, Ryan Schrader. If you've listened to this podcast regularly over the last several months, you know that I believe that Ryan Schrader was dealing with an undisclosed injury this year, which I believe also believe is the main cause for his rapid decline this year. That could mean that he bounces back in 2019, but, you know, given that he's a 31-year-old, soon-to-be 31-year-old, weighs over 300 pounds and presumably was dealing with some type of joint issue in his lower half of his body, doesn't make me super confident of that fact just because the body doesn't recover as well after 30, and having that type of mass pressing down on joints isn't going to necessarily cause them to undeteriorate rapidly. So, you know, unlike Jeff Schultz of The Athletic, I do expect Ryan Schrader to get cut this offseason. Now, I think the chances of that happening is maybe like 60 to 70%. So it's not a guarantee. It's not a slam dunk. But I do think it's more likely than not. And a lot of that is due to other circumstances that I think will become clearer over the next couple of, or at least other circumstances that I suspect might start to crop up over the next, say, you know, 6 or 7 weeks, however long until free agency starts, that will sort of force the Falcons' hands there as far as trying to move money and create salary cap space. But we'll touch upon those things over the next 6 or 7 weeks. I've also gone on record to say that, you know, cutting Schrader becomes a concern, and I'm a little reluctant to do that just because if you do that, then I think right tackle immediately shoots to being your number one on your list of top offseason priorities that have to be addressed. Because I don't think you can get it twisted, ladies and gentlemen, but right tackle is a premium position in the NFL, just like left tackle. Or at least it's an almost premium position, because I know teams don't pay right tackles like they pay left tackles. They don't typically draft right tackle. Well, nowadays they do draft right tackles like they draft left tackles. But, you know, particularly in a league that includes J.J. Watt, Cameron Jordan, DeMarcus Lawrence, Ryan Kerrigan, Von Miller, Michael Bennett, Cameron Wake, Justin Houston, Danielle Hunter, etc., all of whom that make their livings rushing from the left side of a defense, a.k.a. the right side of an offensive line, you better have a competent to good right tackle or you're going to be absolutely screwed. And so, you know, several of those guys I just mentioned are on the Falcons' schedule in 2019. So, to me, if you do dump Schrader, you have to get an upgrade. You know, I think if you do dump him, there's a decent chance that you get an upgrade, but there's also a pretty good chance that you make a significant downgrade, and that becomes an even bigger issue next season, potentially. So part of it is I feel like Schrader is the devil that you know. Now, I'm not suggesting that you sort of keep Schrader and stand pat at the right tackle. I think because of the reasons I outlined, and right tackle being an almost premium position, and in the best case scenario, Schrader is just a 1 year serviceable stopgap in a rebound type of season. So because of that, I also sort of believe that the Falcons have to draft a right tackle in the first two rounds of this year's draft. The sort of scenario in my head is that you draft a guy as your long-term right tackle. But if Schrader does return and comes back and does take care of business at that right tackle spot, maybe if you draft the right guy, that rookie could start out as a guard and play there before sort of kicking out to right tackle starting in 2020. So we'll sort of see how the Falcons approach it. One player I don't think is an option to replace Schrader is Ty Sambrelo. I do expect Sambrelo to be re-signed as a free agent, because I think he's showed that he's a capable swing tackle. For those of you that have been longtime listeners of the podcast, there's one player that I've had much greater disdain for than Mohamed Sanu and Ty Sambrelo, but I think he played pretty well over the second half, the final month of the season. And certainly he outplayed what Schrader was putting on tape over his last month as a starter, certainly. So I'm not completely sold on Sambrelo. That's me being stubborn. But I do think he did still show some of the weaknesses that are still apparent in his skill set. But I think for whatever reason, they weren't necessarily exploited to the same degree over those final four games as they had been over pretty much any other appearance he had made over the three previous years. Some people, are saying that maybe that means he's turned the corner as a player in a similar way that Jake Matthews has turned a corner. If you want to say that about Jake Matthews, I don't think Jake turned a corner. Maybe he leaned around a corner, but he was already at the corner. Ty Sambrelo was like two blocks down the street, if you ask me. But I think Sambrelo played well enough that he improved himself to be at least the very least capable depth at that offensive tackle position. And so I think that deserves an opportunity to come back and at least be in the driver's seat to be the swing tackle again in 2019. I think you got to bring, you're definitely going to bring back a guy like Matt Gano to push him, though. And I think we saw flashes of Gano being good last preseason. We saw some flashes of him being not so good last preseason. But there is clear developmental upside with his athleticism. Obviously, this regime under this coaching staff and under this GM don't have a illustrious history of developing young, talented offensive linemen with upside over the last decade plus. So you do wonder a little bit about that. But I think you definitely want to bring Gano back next summer to push Sambrelo for that swing tackle spot. I think Gano is one of the few young offensive linemen on this team that has potential, but he does need to earn a roster spot. He doesn't necessarily need to be given a roster spot, which you can argue, I think the Falcons kind of gave him a roster spot this year just because of the flashes were good enough. It's not to say that he didn't deserve a roster spot, but he was on the borderline, I would say, by the end of preseason, for me at least. So for me, I guess, looking at the tackle situation in the way I've outlined it, if we're going to do any sort of discussion of 2019, I'm not saying this should happen. I'm not saying this will happen. But at least now, at this point in the calendar year, you can sort of play it with hypotheticals a little bit more. We're not even in February quite yet. Maybe some of you are listening to this in February, but I'm recording it still in January. But I could see a scenario where the Falcons bring five tackles to camp. Jake Matthews, Ryan Schrader, an early round rookie, Sambrelo, and Gano. And Matthews and the rookie are locks to make the team. The others aren't. Schrader, is in that situation. He's competing for a starting spot. If he wins it, he sticks. If he doesn't, then he's probably cut. In between Sambrelo and Gano, you probably keep whoever is the better of those two. But there is also a scenario where you keep all five of those guys. Again, assuming Schrader wins the starting job, and between the rookie, Sambrelo, and Gano, all of whom who at least have the potential to play some guard, maybe that forces one of those guys to kick inside and they earn a spot there. And so you keep four tackles and a sort of hybrid guard / tackle as well. So that's one possible hypothetical. I don't know. But again, it's January, so we can sort of play hypotheticals as we get into March and April. We can sort of get into some real cemented things. So that's what I wanted to say about this Falcons 2018 offensive line. There's some pieces there, but you just don't have a lot of known commodities. It's basically Jake Matthews and that's it. And so that's one of the reasons why it's such a big priority, because beyond Jake Matthews, I don't know who's going to be starting for this Falcons off. You know, I'm 98% confident Alex Mack's going to start for at center this year, unless he retires. But beyond 2019, I don't know if Alex Mack's going to be here. I don't know who's going to be the left guard. Maybe it's Wes Schweitzer in 2019, but he's a free agent in 2020. So even if he is the left guard, doesn't guarantee he's going to be that guy. Fusco's certainly not a guarantee to be on the roster this year, and certainly not in 2020. And of course, Ryan Schrader's in the same boat. Same with Sam Brailo, same with Gano, same with all these guys. So there's a lot of question marks on this Falcons offensive line, and that to me more so than they're just, you know, it's a terrible unit, as some people might say, is why the Falcons need to make it a priority this offseason, particularly in the draft. They have to get some viable, young, long-term fixtures, but they obviously can sort of supplement it somewhat in free agency as well to get some immediate help, since we know, given some of these young guys that we've had currently on the team and in previous years, that it's not often that rookies come in, you know, and hit the ground running on the offensive line. So we'll see how it goes, and looking forward to doing some more discussion of this offensive line in future dates. But we got a Senior Bowl / Hawaiian game breakdown coming on tomorrow's episode, if all things go according to plan, to finish out your week. And then Monday, we'll be back. If you guys send in some mailbags, some questions via the mailbag, I will answer those on Monday. If not, then we can maybe start our defensive roster breakdown starting on Monday. So it's up to you guys. If you send in questions on Facebook, Locked On Falcons, Twitter, Locked On Falcons, email, lockedonfalcons@mail.com, or leave a comment at falcons.com, where the podcast is posted daily, that will determine sort of whether or not we do a Monday mailbag. So send in those questions if you have them. If you don't, then look forward to a I don't know if I'm going to do D-line or edge. I'll probably do D-line just because I got to save my Vic Beasley hot takes for not that early in the week. You don't want to get your weeks off to such a scorching start quite yet. So until then, guys.
You are Locked On Falcons, your daily podcast on the Atlanta Falcons, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.